You don't like that verse? Huh? No? Okay, this is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text number 38. English. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting. Again, do thou fight for the sake of fighting. Without considering happiness or distress. Loss or gain. Victory or defeat. And by so doing, you will never incur sin. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Krishna now directly says that Arjuna should fight for the sake of fighting because he desires the battle, because Krishna desires the battle. There is no consideration of happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat in the activities of Krishna consciousness. That everything should be performed for the sake of Krishna is transcendental consciousness. So there is no reaction to material activities. He who acts for his own sense gratification, either in goodness or in passion, is subject to the reaction, good or bad. But he who has completely surrendered himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness is no longer obliged to anyone, nor is he a debtor to anyone, as one is in the ordinary course of activities. It is said, Devarshi bhutaptarninam pritinam nikinkaram nayanam rine narajan sarvatmana yak sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam padiritya kartum. This is a important verse that we hear often. We'll go over it. Anyone who has completely surrendered unto Krishna, Mukunda, giving up all other duties, is no longer a debtor, nor is he obliged to anyone, not the demigods, nor the sages, nor the people in general, nor kinsmen, nor humanity, nor forefathers. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 41. That is the verdict given by Krishna to Arjuna in this verse, and the matter will be more clearly explained in the following verses. Om Agana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksura Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desatarane. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, my eyes shut, but my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. So we offer respects and we pray that we can represent that your desire to hear about Krishna, then Krishna will utilize me to say something. So this is about dualities. There's many, many verses that are similar. Sukhiduke, Sukhiduka. Krishna says, you know, heat, Sukhiduki, hot, cold, Sitoshna, Sukhidukada, Agamo Payano Nitya, that this comes from the mind, you know, attachment, dualities. So this constant thing that everyone is practically motivated by in the material world. We don't want to be defeated, we want victory. Krishna says other verses, praise and blame, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, right? And you can go on and on and on. Everybody's worried to be not fat or not skinny, and want to be strong and not weak. We want to be smart and not stupid, right? There's all these dualities. So Krishna says, Yesham Twantikatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam. When one is, you know, given up all bad association, and he's taken to what really means Krishna consciousness. Then, te dwanda moha nirmukta, then he's liberated from the dualities. And then, bhajanti mam dridhavrata, then one can have a firm vow to serve Krishna. Dridhavrata. When we get free from this duality, we're doing our service out of duty, not worrying. So, of course, not that we shouldn't want to win. I don't know what the battle is, but that we don't care that we get glorified and praised for what we did, or we get chastised. Sometimes we get chastised for things we didn't even do, right? Many times. But if we understand karma and we understand that nothing acts independently of Krishna, then we, like Sita, when Sita was captured by Ravana, she was suffering. And when Hanuman came, and then he was going to take her away, but they had a lot of talk, actually, a lot of discussion. She was actually chastising Hanuman not to be so angry. And she said she thought very carefully about her whole life. And in her life, she couldn't, had never done anything sinful or anything wrong or adharmic or even small mistakes. You know, what to speak of gross sinful things. But so she calculated that she must have done something in her previous life. Otherwise this wouldn't happen to her. So she was taken. It's a good example. Prabhupada one time, he was early on in Montreal, and it was actually Gopal Krishnamurti had brought somebody from his office or something. And so the guy started, just while Prabhupada was talking, he started challenging, how can you say that? How do you know that Krishna is God? You're wrong, you know, this is not, the Hindu knows this and that. Very nasty. So the devotees got, you know, really disturbed. Tried to stop him, and Prabhupada said, all right, let him talk. So he finished talking, and then he was quiet. And afterward, Prabhupada said, I must have offended him in my past life. So therefore, he came back to offend me. So that's a spiritual realization. So that's how a devotee, he sees everything like that, that it's Krishna. And we read yesterday, Prabhupada was talking about, the devotee sees death coming, he thinks there comes Krishna when he sees it. When Prabhupada said when they were bombing Calcutta, I guess the British were bombing, maybe somebody was bombing Calcutta, but he stayed. He said, I saw this as a universal form of Krishna. He said, I didn't like that form, but that's what he, this is Krishna in this destructive feature. So we're, you know, we want to win, we want to be praised, we want to be honored, and we don't want the other side, generally. We want to be rich, and we want to be famous. Krishna covers in chapter 12 like a whole long list of these things. When he's saying, who's dear to me? And he says, the one who's equal in all these things is dear to me. Now, artificially, to be equal in these conditions is very difficult. Just to, you know, think of nothing, you know. Just try to take it. But if we understand that nothing, Krishna is behind everything, and nothing happens by accident, the Super Soul is guiding us, and he's guiding whoever we meet, and when we meet them, according to our desires. And then as we try to surrender to Krishna, Krishna also takes a hand, you know, and helps. So we may get some, you know, big difficulty, problem, people insulting us. Insult and praise, that's another one of the dualities. And one has to see, well, you know, okay, how am I going to react to this? Am I going to remember Krishna, and am I going to be cool-headed, and, you know, or am I going to pull my gun out and shoot the person who insulted me, and, you know, do something to retaliate, or, you know, if I can't immediately kill them, am I going to go and make a plot to ruin their reputation, or, you know, or am I going to just try to change my own behavior so I don't disturb people so much? That would be the more Krishna conscious thing. So surrendering to Krishna is the best policy. So this verse, it's here from the Bhagavatam. Devarshi bhutapta ninam prichinam. The demigods, the common people, other living entities, the forefathers, Kinkaro Nayam, Rene Narajan, and all these other things. Sarvatmana Yak Sharanam Sharanayam. When one's completely surrendered to Krishna, then he's not in debt anymore. Otherwise, we have unlimited debts. We're indebted to our forefathers who, you know, built our great country and wrote the laws to give us freedom to come to the temple and go to the bars and whatever we want to do. And we're indebted to the demigods who supply all the basic necessities of life. We're indebted to every teacher we ever had. And, you know, who knows, you know, doctors we went to and, you know, anybody that ever helped us. I sometimes remember in my life as a child, you know, like, maybe I was just about to step out in front of a bus, but somebody pushes you back and you don't even take note of it, you know. But then you owe those people. You can't possibly find all the people we're indebted to. And what to speak of repaying the debts. So it's like sometimes, I think it's happening now, I heard America had this phenomena, and I think it's happening more and more in Europe now, since these credit cards are so common. Right? So people don't realize they have to pay. Or they just don't keep track, you know. They buy things that, you know, well, oh, this refrigerator is only £10 a week. That's nothing. Okay, this car is only, you know, $200 a month. And this television is only this. And before they know it, they have more bills than they have money. It happens to so many people. So they can't pay back. You know, their income is not sufficient. And if you sell your fridge or your television, you won't get much, right? If you sell it the next day, you know, you're not going to get anywhere near what you have to pay for it. So in America, a huge percentage of people are actually in that insolvent condition. But then they have other banks or... And then they will, you make refinance over a longer period of time, and they give you payments that you can afford, and then they pay off all your bills. And of course, you also pay a lot of interest, so you really pay more, but at least you can not go to jail or, you know, have to move out of your house or something. In America, you can buy a car very easily if you just have a job. And you can pay the first month payment. You can buy a car in 5 years. So for 2 years, you only pay for the interest. You don't even pay for the car. And then if you go to sell it, you get, after 2 years, you get a small percentage of what it costs. You haven't even started to pay for it. You don't get anything near back what you owe. And if you miss a few payments, then the company just, they have these guys they call repossessors. When we distributed books in the airport, we used to meet them, and they just fly around and they steal cars. Now, you didn't pay for your car, so they don't come to your door or anything. They just go and drive it away. And then the bank says, yeah, if you pay the entire balance off, you can have it back. So whatever you paid is gone. So these debts, that's a gross, but all these other debts we have for everything, you know, that there's no way to pay them all back. But there is one way, is to surrender to Krishna, then he covers everything. Because ultimately the debt is to Krishna. Krishna is the one who supplied the demigods, and Krishna is the one who, you know, created the earth for us to live on, and the air, and all the people that have done anything for us, and our parents, and forefathers, and, you know, all these things. So when one really surrenders to Krishna, then he is free from any obligation to society, family. But that means really total surrender. It's not like a joke. It doesn't say one should abandon, but that everything is covered. like in Vedic culture, a sannyasi is considered legally dead. And so he can't be sued, you know, for previous debts or anything. Can't be sued by his family that he's not taking care of. That in this Kali Yuga, you know, people will take advantage of that and just become so-called sadhus or something, and but they're not really serving Krishna. So then they are still obliged. They're still in debt. And they're increasing their debt by ignoring their duties. But really surrendering to Krishna is the only way to free us. Otherwise, like in Vedic culture, they don't have this, like banks that loan you money with interest and all that kind of stuff. Nobody would do that because if I loan you money and you don't pay me back, and both of us have to take birth again, you know, to straighten it out. So, you know, nobody wants to do that. And that can happen, Prabhupada said, sometimes if someone has a son that just gives him so much trouble, because in the previous life, maybe that son owed him money and he just harassed that person in the next life to harass you. So these, so many complications are there. So it doesn't mean now if you surrender Krishna that you don't have to pay off your house payment and your mortgage and your car and all that. But these other debts, these social debts and that kind of thing, Krishna takes care of everything. And then Krishna may, you know, help us to have enough intelligence how to handle everything. Because in Kali Yuga people, I know I opened a checking account or something when we were in Fiji. And Fiji, most people are farmers. And so the banker gave us this paper that was saying don't write checks unless you have money in the bank and all this. They said, I'm sorry, you know, have to tell you this because I know you understand, but these people don't. You know. And many people go with the credit card. They have, because now every day when you open up your internet, you were approved for another credit card, right? So you can pay off the previous one on another one. But it is not getting anywhere except increasing the interest on everything. So if we don't surrender to Krishna, and no matter how much good karma we try to do and, you know, and to pay off, you know, we can't do it. We can't fully pay off all our debts, all our obligations to the demigods and the forefathers and, you know, people we've never seen even, you know, even the government of our country. They've all done so much for us. And people we've offended. Like Jagai and Madai, they were very rascal people, and they had offended everyone, and even to the point of murder and thievery and cheating and so many things. And then they offended Lord Nityananda, but then they surrendered and they became great devotees. But the Madai, he was the one that was really bad. And after some time he came to Lord Nityananda and he said, I want a benediction. You have to help me. So Nityananda said, what is it? He said, well, I've offended so many people, but I can't remember. There's too many. I don't, you know, they were drunk and, you know, they don't remember everything they ever did. He said, I want you to give me that, you know, that I can recognize everyone and find everyone I ever offended and apologize or make up for it. And Nityananda said, it's not possible, you know, because you've offended too many people. It's not possible to do that. But you have to just take up serving humanity, you know. And so he made Madai God, you know. He went to the bank of the Ganga and he dug out, you know, and they call it bathing God in India. They had a stairway going into the river, and he built that whole thing, and he would stay there, keep everything really clean, and he would fold up everybody's clothes and wash their clothes and serve all the devotees for the rest of his life, and also chanting all the time. So then he said, that way you can, can't really find all the people. I mean, many of the people that have helped us, they're dead now, right? Or we don't even know they ever helped us. Or we don't know we offended them, but they might have felt offended. But when we surrender to Krishna, he's in everyone's heart and he takes care of everything. So that's what's recommended. But surrender to Krishna is not some artificial thing. It means service. It means taking up the practice of bhakti, serving the Lord under the guidance of a spiritual master, not just someone, okay, I surrender to God, and God, please forgive all my sins, and, you know, let all my enemies love me, and, you know, and then it's all right. That's not what surrender means. Surrender means really taking up, giving up. Tesham, yesham, twantagatam papa. Giving up all the bad association, giving up the bad activities, the sinful activities, taking up the positive spiritual activities. Then we can become elevated and free from this, you know, being totally distressed when someone doesn't approve of us or insults us or criticizes us. Even the, you know, the business advisors and stuff, I just saw one book and they were telling the big boss of the company, you should be happy to be criticized. You know, you should think about it. If someone, you know, doesn't like you, you think about it. When Lord Ramachandra, when people were unhappy with him, and he was the king of the world, and not only that, but he was God, he had unlimited power. Even as a king, he had unlimited power. But he would think, how, you know, I must have done something to disturb this person, so how, what can I do to make him happy? He wouldn't think, well, this person is disturbing my whole kingdom by, and I'll just eliminate him, you know, put him in the prison or send him out, like we see some politicians do, right? In many countries in the world, the dictators or something, they kill so many people that Stalin, he just, if he heard anybody was, you know, against him, he would call him in and say, here's some poison, you can either take this poison or I'll shoot you. Kill you. Take your choice. No trial, no consideration. Just, and we've heard many like that. And some are not quite that violent, but they have that kind of attitude. But the proper attitude is shown by Krishna, by Lord Ramachandra, by all the great devotees, by Krishna himself. Krishna said, if my enemy does something good, I'll reward him. If my own son does something bad, I'll punish him the same as anyone else. That's proper. No favoritism. So, he's telling Arjuna's duty is to fight. And it apparently looks like Arjuna is afraid to fight. But he's not afraid. It's for his own life, but he's just afraid of that after he wins the war and kills everybody, then it'll be a big mess. So he's thinking, well, we maybe just let them have the kingdom, let them, you know, they're greedy, they want everything, so let them have it, you know, I can be happy in the forest, you know, as a sadhu, live by begging. But Krishna wanted to establish the proper kings, so he wanted him to fight. So he's saying, do your duty, and it's not sinful, you know, it's your proper duty. The kshatriya is fighting for the good cause, and his killing is not a sinful activity. But nowadays, you know, the wars, everybody's bad, so it's hard to say that. But everybody thinks that their side is righteous and God is on their side. There was one song back in the 60s, when God's on your side, you know, then you don't count the dead when God's on your side, you know, in the war. And then he said that then at the end it was the Germans. Now the Germans have God. And after, in the World War II, the Americans and Germans were the big enemies. You know. And as soon as the war was over, very quickly they became the best friends. And the other Russians that were the enemies became the friends became the enemies. And so it's a madness. Nobody can, you know, exactly figure out why. It becomes food for lots of speculative history books and everything, trying to explain. Only you can understand that the modes of nature are acting, and they're just forcing everyone to act in one way or another. And the material world, the winds are always changing. It blows this way, blows that way. Like in London, the weather's always changing. That's why we say, well, you came in spite of all this rain. Of course, in London, rain doesn't really affect anybody very much because it's so common thing. Can't get too upset about it, right? That's dualities, but just think if a person in London depended on good weather, you know, they'd really have a hard time. You'd become very happy when it becomes nice, and then before you know it, it changed. Right? You know, in the morning you look out and it looks really nice, and then by the time you leave the room, it's no good anymore. Freezing cold rain or something. So we want to be even-minded, but the only way to do that is to be understanding that Krishna is behind it. And if we chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then, you know, we can remember Krishna. He'll help us to see, and then we can become equal in all these different situations. And that then we can be peaceful. Otherwise we become, you know, happy when something goes what we think is right, and then we become unhappy when something doesn't go right. And then whenever, you know, and nothing ever goes always what we think is right or always what we think is wrong. You can't, the material, things change. When we go out to distribute books, for instance, you know, some people will tell us, you know, you people are just a disturbance in society and, you know, nobody wants to see you out here. And sometimes they tell you it's against the law and they're going to call the police, and even though we know that's not against the law. And then the next person will say, wow, it's so nice, I've been looking for you people, and, you know, do you have this book, do you have that one, where's your temple, right? You're such a great person to do this. Sometimes they tell you, wow, this must be really difficult, and we think, yeah, wow, yeah, it's true. And the next person, you know, punches you in the face and steals your books and runs away or something, you know. So then that's why in the traditional ashrams in every religion, Christianity, Buddhism, the monks go begging. And it's not for the money, it's for character development. Because when you're begging, that's what happens. Some people like it, some people don't like it. People insult you, people chase you away, people invite you in their house, people offer sometimes all kinds of unofferable things that you can't accept, and you have to, you know, you have to develop an equal consciousness. In the traditional Buddhist begging of Japan, which you don't, not so many do anymore, but they have this hat that comes out like pretty big, and then they hold their donation box so they can't see the box and they can't see the person. And they just chant their mantras. And then everyone that gets a donation, they say thank you. But they don't know who gave it and they don't know how much they gave. But the idea is they won't become attached. Like when Raghunath Das Goswami, when he quit taking the money from his rich father, then he started begging outside the temple, and went to Jagannath temple. And if you've ever been to Jagannath Puri, all the pujaris, they come out with the prasadam, you know, depending on what their position is, they have a big pot. So he would beg and take what he would get. But then he thought, this is like prostitution, because he was thinking, oh, this person gave me yesterday, maybe I'll get something nice today from him. Or, that person's not nice, he didn't give me anything. So he quit that. He didn't like that mentality. He started just standing in the food for life line. You know, the beggar, where you just stand in line and get. And then he quit even taking that, and he just started going where they throw out the whole stuff. So that's a real renunciation. But all these things that, you know, you cannot really achieve this equanimity unless we really understand that Krishna is behind everything. That everyone, we're riding on this body, and Krishna is riding with us, and he's directing the movements, and of our own movements and everyone else, everyone we meet and everything that happens. And then try to see everything as Krishna would see it through the eyes of the scripture. So thank you very much. The prasadam is ready, it looks like. The server is plates are already, so if you volunteer to serve, you won't starve. Saving something for you. Right? And There's always more prasadam than anyone needs anyway. So any question? When can we eat? Right, first question. Huh? You ready?
Yeah.
Free. Yeah, okay. So if you don't have Bhagavad Gita, please purchase one. We have them in the shop. We have them here. And if you have it, please read it. Or today we're having a book distribution marathon for Srimati Radharani. So if you want, if you have Bhagavad Gita and you think it's worthwhile, buy a few and give them to your friends. Give them to your enemies. Give them to somebody. All right? Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you, Maharaj, for wonderful class. We need 4 servers to help serve the Shadam, please.